This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I am not Matt McNeil. I am Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. Today, Patrick's on the board. Have you voted yet, Patrick?
I have, so that's taken care of.
Good. Yeah, I have too. It's my daughter's first voting day. She's probably going to vote while I'm on the radio, though, so it would have been fun to go with her on her first voting day. She's 19. And very fired up for things. Yeah, like you said, Patrick, there's really not much to talk about. I think we should maybe just go through some recipes today is what I'm thinking. Because, I mean, it's getting boring. Go ahead.
I was going to say, maybe we could talk about a recipe for blueberry cobbler today.
Yeah, why don't we do that? No, it is kind of getting boring. Because there's just such a waterfall, a damn broken waterfall of stuff every day. I sat in for Matt the last part of the last week and part of the first week of last week of June, first week of July, and it was right when Roe v. Wade got overturned, and there was something every day back then. I remember thinking, "Wow, it's pretty incredible that Matt took these days off because, he's kind of missing talking about all these stuff. But, man, it makes my job a lot easier." And, of course, I had a whole thing because it is primary voting day, both here in Minnesota and in Wisconsin, and I wanted to talk about that, and I am going to talk about that. But, you know, it kind of throws your whole – when you try and make a plan for doing these shows these days, you may as well not, because something comes in to change it, and it's the next thing everybody's talking about. But I will remind everybody that, you know, maybe about a month ago, everyone was talking about Elon Musk, and is Elon going to run for president, and is he going to buy Twitter? Is he not going to buy Twitter? Is Twitter going to sue him? And now we've completely and thoroughly forgotten about Elon Musk. So things keep moving, but part of the reason that happens is because there is just so many things going on. So I'll start here. It's fun on a day like this to be on Twitter the way I am with my people that I'm following, at least. I'll just go down Twitter here. I'm not even on stuff that I previously marked to go down. This is just what's on Twitter right now. Neil Katyal says, search of Trump abusive? Law enforcement leaves a copy of the search warrant, which itemizes what they are looking for and what laws were violated. So if Trump and the RNC think this search signed off on by a Fed judge is abusive and they have nothing to hide, release the warrant to the public. But they're not going to do that because they have a lot to hide. So I'm not going to keep naming all the people who are writing this stuff because a lot of it is just people putting in little funny jabs. Here's one. To all the Republicans crying about Mar-a-Lago, allow me to console you by reminding you that this is all God's will. Important reminder, as the Republican conspiracy theories start, the current director of the FBI was chosen by Trump.
One of my favorite ones was Trump's library was stolen. Trump's library was destroyed, including the coloring books that he hadn't finished.
That he had more than that in his library? I think it's a library. In Mar-a-Lago, I think it's the library. Here's another one. This fall, from the party that brought you Lock Her Up, comes How Dare the FBI Investigate Politicians. Another one, absolutely incredible, watching the Black and Blue Party suddenly shift to calling to defund law enforcement now. Dear Trumpers, Trump picked the FBI director that raided his home. Okay, bye. Rick Wilson writes, it was a beautiful raid, a perfect raid. People tell me they've never seen as perfect raid as this one. It's never, it's the people say. A picture of Obama, George W. Bush, and Clinton. Our homes were never raided by the FBI. And then Lakota Man writes, Sitting Bull's residence was not raided by the FBI. Another one, I haven't seen Republicans this angry since Sesame Street told them to get vaccinated, or the green M&M got less sexy, or Michelle Obama told their kids to do jumping jacks, or Barack wore a tan suit, or, and then it says that's the first tweet of 269 tweets. So we could do that all day. The FBI raid of Mar-a-Lago could have a chilling effect on future presidents' ability to hide classified materials detailing their efforts to overthrow the government. Yeah. They go on and you don't become the first FBI director, the first attorney general, and the first federal judge in our nation's history to grant a search and siege warrant for the home of a former president unless you've seen the smoking gun. By the way, more things about this. Here's one from Jeff Edinger. And it's just simply, vote today. Got to remember that. Don't forget to vote. A reminder of some other things. Apparently, the things that Trump had were so classified that the DOJ couldn't even mention some of the stuff that they were going after because it's on such a high level of classification. And of course, it's not like Trump ever communicates with Russia or Russian intelligence, right? So this is a huge national security issue. But, you know, if they go in there and they find something having to do... So they did this, it's sounding like, although Trump won't show us the search warrant, but it's sounding like they're going in because of this document, these boxes and boxes of documents that Trump brought home from the White House, brought them with him to Mar-a-Lago when he left the White House for the final time. Thank God. So that's what this is about. But if they go in and they find evidence of other things, because we know Trump is under investigation for a few things. The first, when the news very first came out, by the way, broken by Trump, Trump was the first one to mention, the Democrats just broke into my house. They just broke in. Which isn't what happened. What happened is it was a no-knock warrant, so they did kind of invade his house. But it wasn't the Democrats. It was the Justice Department and the FBI. And they had a warrant that was signed off by the Attorney General and a Trump-appointed judge and the Trump-appointed FBI director. And the only way that happens is when the people asking for the search warrant are pretty much 100% sure that they're going to find something. You don't put up a search warrant like this and then carry through with the search warrant and come up empty. That nearly never happens. It's not going to happen at this level, especially because they're also being very careful about politicizing this. I saw Senator Schumer get asked about this. You know, hey, we just heard that Mar-a-Lago was raided by the FBI. What do you have to say about it? And he said, I don't know anything about it. So I don't feel qualified to make a statement at this time. Well, are you sure? Because I'm not gonna talk about it. He was very disciplined in not answering any questions about it. Of course, Kevin McCarthy. So Chuck Schumer is very savvy and smart and disciplined. He just proved his talent over the last 6 weeks, passing all of these bills. Kevin McCarthy, the leader, minority leader in the House, He's about as dumb as, what would you say, a box of rocks? A drawer of hammers?
That would be an insult to a drawer of hammers and a box of rocks.
I agree with you. I don't think we can come up with anything that Kevin McCarthy is. He's more stupid than everything, I think would be an accurate statement. He has proven that time and time again. And he came out with a statement saying, when Republicans take control this fall, you know, and then he said something like, Merrick Garland, preserve your documents and open up your calendar because we're coming after you. I think they're also going to throw Joe Biden in jail. And it's going to happen this fall. They're going to get elected. They're not going to get sworn in yet, but they're going to throw Fauci in jail. They're going to throw Biden in jail. Probably should just throw Kamala Harris in jail too. And we're going to throw Merrick Garland in jail. Who else? Who else should we throw? Well, just anyone we feel like. That's how they've been talking for 6 years. Lock her up. Lock her up. Lock her up. And now they're mad that FBI did a very, very careful warrant on Mar-a-Lago and raided it.
Broke in. They even broke into my safe. I had a hamburger in there. I hope they didn't eat it.
Anyway. Yeah, so while we're coming up to break time here on the Civic Media Radio Network, I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for the Matt McNeil Show. Going further down Twitter, just randomly, saying someone weaponized the Justice Department to investigate potential crimes is like saying someone weaponized the fire department to put out a fire. Another reminder that Trump has a copy of the warrant and could show it to us at any time. Somebody asks the FBI to do an unboxing video. And then somebody tries to point out things in movies, and it has a very flattering picture of Jamie Lee Curtis. And then there's a picture of Mar-a-Lago. FBI raids home of Epstein-linked Clinton donor. Somebody says, wow, all these Republicans who are outraged by the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago, calling it government overreach while they prosecute women for medical procedures and the doctors who perform life-saving procedures. And then somebody points out that Joe Biden formally welcomed Finland and Sweden, joining the NATO alliance today. Another thing Joe Biden did today was he signed the CHIPS Act, which is a very good thing. It's basically what that is doing. It's called the CHIPS and Science Act. It will provide $52.7 billion for American semiconductor research, development, and manufacturing. This law will secure domestic supply and create tens of thousands of good-paying union jobs in the process. It will also very much help our supply chain issues, which me in my business, we're still feeling a little bit of it. It feels like it's almost done. We just got a bunch of delayed parts, so I'm at the moment very busy doing. I was in there last night until 10 o'clock doing some assembly work because waiting for parts, and then a whole bunch of parts come in. Now I'm going to be in there till 10 o'clock at least every night, trying to get caught up on all the many products that are late going out our door. And it's because of aluminum, availability to aluminum. I went through some electronic component issues for almost 2 years. And by the way, the supply chain issues began before Joe Biden became president. Mike Pompeo asks, or he says, executing a warrant against ex-POTUS is dangerous. The apparent political weaponization of the DOJ and FBI is shameful. The AG must explain why 250 years of practice was upended with this raid. I served on Benghazi and where we proved Hillary possessed classified info. We didn't raid her home. First of all, I don't think the Benghazi committee proved that Hillary possessed classified info. And the reason that 250 years of practice was upended, it's because it was originally upended by you and your crime boss, Trump, while he was president. You wanker. Eric says, my father never got so much as a speeding ticket in his life. But his father, of course, had to pay $25 million to people he defrauded through Trump University. And another thing, I don't think Donald Trump's ever driven a car in his life. So otherwise, I'm sure he would have got plenty, you know, driving well, stoned on Adderall, possibly. Anyone being investigated by the FBI is not qualified to be the president of the United States. Who said that, Patrick? No guess?
I don't have a guess, unfortunately.
You're supposed to say something funny, you know, like the Stephanie Miller Show does. You're supposed to say like Fonzie, Arthur Fonzarelli or something like that. But the person who actually said anyone being investigated by the FBI is not qualified to be president of the United States.
Oh, that was Donald Trump himself.
That was Donald Trump himself. He said it. This person did a little research. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They found at least 7 times and listed the dates. David Axelrod points out, one thing is very clear. Garland would not have authorized this raid, and no federal judge would have signed off on it if there weren't significant evidence to warrant it. And you got to think, especially right now, this summer, before the midterm elections, when all of this is so sensitive, you know they're being uber careful. Because, of course, it should not be politicized. If you're a criminal, you're a criminal, period. This isn't a political thing. This is a criminal thing. But yet we have Republicans. Representative Andy Biggs says, I stand by President Donald J. Trump. Okay. Do you want me to come to your house to fit you for your orange suit, dummy? So, anyway. We should switch to talking about the primaries. Both Patrick and I have already voted here in Minnesota. What about you in Wisconsin? Have you voted yet? Give me a call at 952-946-6205. Tell me you voted. A lot of interesting stuff going on in Wisconsin concerning the primary election. One thing, so there is Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. He is a 35-year-old black man who is very charismatic and full of energy, and he's the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, and he was in a primary race with 3 other people, and he's running for the Senate seat, and you know, this primary, you were supposed to vote for one of these 4 people to run against Senator Ron Johnson. And if you live in Wisconsin, you know Ron Johnson. And If you live in Wisconsin, you hate Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson, I don't know what he's best known for. He's another one that's got too many things. We could do a Casey Kasem's countdown of just things Ron Johnson has done that are overwhelmingly stupid and possibly criminal and certainly corrupt. Wisconsin's Democratic primary for United States Senate started out as a wide open contest as the party searched for the next nominee to take on Ron Johnson. That suddenly changed last week, a little more than a week ago. Three of the leading candidates dropped out, paving the way for Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes to win on August 9th on his way to the general election. And we'll talk a little bit more in depth about that when we come back. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. The Civic Media Radio Network, Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. Welcome to all of our listeners from AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, Devil Radio 92.7 FM in Madison, WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus, WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM, The Shaw in Waukesha, Wisconsin, Bull Falls Radio, WXCO 98.9 FM and 1230 AM in Wausau, and locally grown radio WFHR 1320 AM and 97.5 FM in Wisconsin Rapids and Stevens Point. If you're in Wisconsin, go vote. If you're in Minnesota, go vote. It's primary day. Let's demonstrate how fired up the Democratic Party is. Here in Minnesota, it's Democrats are pretty much in array. There's a little bit of a race going on in for the 5th district, congressional district. I kind of feel like it's probably not going to be surprising in the end. And I can't vote on that one. Congressperson is not being nobody's running against him in the primary, so I had nothing to vote for there. We're just voting for things like the sheriff, and it's all important, but it's good to read up on who you want to vote for. We have, I think, 7 people running for the Hennepin County commissioner. And I think 5 people running for the sheriff, something like that. So you do got to bone up on things, pick your person. In our case, so many of them are good. I hate to vote not for any one of them, but got to pick somebody. But to tell you the truth, if my person doesn't win in either of those races, I'm going to be very happy with whoever ends up winning, because they're all really great candidates. I was actually a delegate at the Hennepin County convention, and so I saw all of them present themselves, do a speech and things like that, and I really loved pretty much all of them. So I'm going to be happy with whoever wins. In Wisconsin, your gubernatorial race was going to be a big deal. It was going to be big news. Now everybody dropped out except one guy, and we were just talking about that before we went to this break. And there's a story in Rolling Stone, actually, connected to this that I think is also points out some interesting things nationwide as well. They're talking about Mandela Barnes. He was actually named after the leader of South Africa by his parents. I think that's his middle name, actually. But anyway. Yeah, he grew up in a poor part of Milwaukee. His mom and dad are hardworking people. And he's been fighting for causes he believes in for pretty much since he was a kid. He sounds like a really great guy. I'll just read a little bit from this article. It was an era when Democratic Senate candidates were fixtures on MSNBC, preaching soundbites to the liberal choir and hoovering up millions of dollars worth of donations, a reward for taking on a reviled Trump toady. Fast forward 2 years to now, and Barnes is now a Democratic Senate candidate himself, but he's appeared on the liberal cable network only a handful of times since declaring his candidacy. There's a time to get the message out on the MSNBC loudspeaker, as he calls it, but the focus is here in Wisconsin, he says. It's important that I spend as much time as I can just talking to people here. A platitude, to be sure, but at least it's grounded in the reality of his campaign strategy to take out Senator Ron Johnson. Instead, Barnes has turned up the dial on the I don't know what that word is. I'm just going to skip a little bit. He's shaking hands at union halls in Oshkosh, holding roundtables about gun violence in Milwaukee, and crisscrossing the state for a Barnes for Barnes tour to talk about hardships facing family farms. Barnes has every opportunity to run like 2020's highest-profile Democrats, a legendary must-win state, a high-profile, loathsome opponent, a rising star quality that's long earned him comparisons to Barack Obama, but he's rejecting that route in favor of one that typifies how his party is approaching 2022. In doing so, he hopes to avoid Democrats' mistakes of 2020, when the party, high on its resistance supply, lost winnable races, overplayed in winnable ones, and made everything about Trump. I would like to point out that they're not mentioning the pandemic, which drastically changed the election in 2020. For one thing, here in Minnesota, the DFL was not allowed to door knock, which is the secret to winning elections in the state level. Going back to this article, Barnes doesn't put a lot of effort into tying Johnson to former President Donald Trump, even though Johnson is arguably the Trumpiest senator. He doesn't belabor his wild Johnson's wild conspiracies, even though they're some of the wildest uttered by a sitting lawmaker. Instead, he's attacking Johnson the way Obama beat Mitt Romney, by saying he's an out-of-touch plutocrat working for the wealthy against everyone else, and contrasting that with his own Milwaukee-based middle-class upbringing. Not to say his messaging is entirely conventional, but he's a lot more conventional we're kind of comparing. It sounds like the Democratic Party nationwide, because he's getting help, you know, with this campaign, obviously. It's a very important seat that we can turn from red to blue. So of course the National Democratic Party is gonna help. They have a great candidate here running against a horrible person. Last cycle, Democratic Senate candidates failed to translate their hundreds of millions into victories, even with the wind of anti-Trump sentiment at their backs. South Carolina's Jamie Harrison set fundraiser records, calling Senator Lindsey Graham a flip-flopper for hitting his fortunes to Trump and barely performed better than a generic Democrat, though, back then. And he was a really great candidate. I heard him speak at length and was so impressed with him. They go through some other candidates here to make some comparisons, but that's less interesting to me here. Barnes' approach repeats itself across Democrats' top 2022 Senate targets. John Fetterman, some similarities there, also a lieutenant governor, younger, and running a completely different type of campaign than has been ran before, making a lot of news for the things he's doing against Mehmet Oz, doctor. He calls himself a doctor. He has not proven that he is a doctor. And he also lives in New Jersey, not Pennsylvania. So Fetterman's been making a lot of news. I haven't heard as much national news about this race in Wisconsin, but that's kind of what we're talking about. He's definitely, Barnes is definitely a rising star, very charismatic, and very well-liked in Wisconsin. But he is staying in Wisconsin, and he's talking about his roots. He even talked about his parents. His dad is a union member. It's a really long article, so I'm kind of skipping around, but he's been a staunch advocate for addressing climate change and was an early proponent of the Green New Deal. He's also supported Medicare for All as a reasonable way to get to universal health care. He's been vehement in his demands for police reform, especially in the wake of Kenosha shootings in Wisconsin, suggesting at some points that money from budgets could reallocated for other community support services. These are things that you're starting to hear Democrats talking about. He's earned the support of progressive stalwarts like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and AOC, as well as high-profile, more moderate black Democrats such as Representative Jim Clyburn, and Senate Cory Booker. He's everybody pretty much is signing on to him. He's staying down to earth. He's progressive, but he's kind of toning down. He was much more sort of loud about his progressiveness a couple years ago. He still is very staunchly progressive and stands for progressive things. He's kind of doing the same thing, sort of like what Joe Biden's doing, except he's coming at it from the progressive side. Joe Biden's coming at it from the more moderate side. But Joe Biden is passing laws that, you know, Bernie Sanders is very happy about, and AOC is very happy. But you don't hear them griping about Biden anymore. AOC really never did. Bernie Sanders maybe only did because he was running against Biden for a while. But Biden has come toward the progressives, and the progressives have come toward Biden, and we're getting a lot of really good things done. We're getting a lot of really progressive things done. And people are starting to notice, and not just politicians and people like, you know, me who are following this way too much, not just like pundits and reporters and people like that. I'm talking about voters all across the United States. We're starting to notice that the progressive ideas that people like AOC talk about really are very popular in the United States. Everybody keeps still saying that we're divided. We're a country that's divided, and we're just simply not. We're divided in the Senate, and we're divided in the House. And then in the states, maybe we're divided as well by party, but not in public, not regular people. There are a lot of Republicans who, and we, again, this has been proven in Kansas, way to a degree that none of us could have ever imagined, that most Republicans want Roe v. Wade to stay. They know that taking away the right for a woman to get an abortion is not going to stop abortions. It's just going to make people die. That's the only difference that's going to happen here. People are still going to have abortions, and you know rich white Republican women are going to have abortions when their husbands tell them to. And theirs are going to be safe, but everyone else's is possibly not going to be safe and possibly not done in time to save them from something, you know, all of these. We've been talking a lot about it in the last few days on this show. We had Kelly Morrison on Friday going through how dangerous it is and how this legislation is already proving that to hurt women and kill women. And, well, it's not actually legislation. It's just the Supreme Court taking away the freedom and protection that women have had for 50 years in the Constitution. The Republicans who like to talk about the Constitution and freedom and liberty are going against the Constitution and taking away freedom and liberty from women and more. They want to take away more. They want to take away the right to contraception. They do. There's already been a vote. And by the way, this insulin mess, Chuck Schumer said today that when we come back, we're going to make them vote on that again. And that's what you do. That's what Nancy Pelosi's been doing in the House. She's the one who made them vote against contraception. She said, we're going to vote on this bill right now. And we'll see who votes for it and we'll see who votes against it. Things are changing. The midterms are going to go in a way that's going to surprise a lot of people in a good way. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Todd Mickelson sitting in for the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. The Civic Media Radio Network. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. Kind of interesting that I got an email from Governor Evers, the Wisconsin governor, even though I live in Minnesota. I just got it yesterday. And he writes, Todd, all Wisconsinites deserve the right to a safe and legal abortion. Full stop. This shouldn't be political. But with a radical Supreme Court willing to rewrite decades of precedent and Wisconsin Republicans working to strip my constituents of their rights, it unfortunately has become the defining issue in this upcoming election. As governor, I will do everything in my power to protect access to a safe and legal abortion in Wisconsin. But my Republican opponents can't say the same. All of my extremist opponents support Wisconsin's 19th century abortion ban. This archaic law was written before the Civil War and before women secured the right to vote. Now, my opponents want to use it to insert politicians into deeply personal reproductive health care decisions. His opponents are the two main people running for the governor on primary day, which is today, Tim Michaels and Rebecca Clayfish. Rebecca Clayfish endorsed by Pence and Scott Walker. Tim Michaels endorsed by Donald Trump. Donald Trump says, we got to have Tim. We need Tim. We got to have Tim because he's going to fix it. He's gonna fix it. Tim's the only one who's gonna. He's gonna fix it. Rebecca's a rhino. She's not gonna fix the election. What he wants and what Tim Michaels has said he will consider doing is overturning the 2020 election. And the reason Tim Michaels is doing that, do you have a guess on why Tim Michaels is saying that, even though it's impossible for him to do it? Do you have any idea or a guess as to why Tim Michaels is saying that?
Because he wants people to vote for him and get Donald Trump's money behind him?
Yeah, I was going to say he's scared of Donald Trump. But I think you're also right in both of those things. So Tim Michaels is basically making promises not just to Donald Trump but also to Wisconsinites that he is going to do, well, at least possibly, he hasn't, I don't think, committed to saying he's absolutely going to do it. And the reason he hasn't committed to absolutely doing it, do you have a guess on as to why that is?
Because he can't.
It's absolutely impossible, which Rebecca Clayfish points out. She apparently says that she still really supports Donald Trump. But she said, you know, I think we should maybe move on and look forward to the next election because the 2020 election, we can't overturn it. It's just impossible. It's not something that's in reality here in the third dimension. You know, she actually even starts by saying, I'm not saying it's imaginary, but she kind of is saying it's an imaginary thing that can be done because it can't be done. But she's afraid of insulting Trump supporters because you can't win on primary day if you're not, appeasing the Trump supporters and Donald Trump. So in Wisconsin, I'm kind of rooting for Tim Michaels because that will ensure an even better win, a wider margin for Governor Evers to win re-election.
It's kind of interesting. Just a couple weeks ago in Arizona, when Trump and Pence were having dueling events with their preferred candidates, that same thing was going on in Wisconsin last week as Trump had his big rally outside Milwaukee with Tim Michaels and that, his endorsed group. And Pence was at an event with Clay Fish, I'm sure a much smaller lower key event, I'm sure. But, they were once again, you see those two contrasts on display that, Donald Trump and Mike Pence, certainly not on the same page anymore.
Right. Also, Robin Ross, who is the state assembly speaker, it's the same thing as what we would call the House Speaker here in Minnesota. Wisconsin, I don't know what crazy thing you got. You call it the assembly instead of the House. Oh, whatever. So basically, the Speaker of the House, the state assembly speaker, Robin Ross, has already been called a rhino by Trump and his people because he pointed out you can't do this. And, I really can't figure out why they think I can figure out why Trump thinks that he still just wants to talk about nothing but the 2020 election because he's got no future other than being in an orange jumpsuit. So for him, it's, talking about the past is all he's got. But if you're trying to get elected right now as a Republican, the fact that you're still concentrating on the 2020 election is just so beyond idiotic. I cannot figure out why they're doing it, except for they're afraid to go against Trump because they think that they're still needing to appease Trump's supporters. But then if they do that, I could go around and round here. It's like a chicken or the egg. If they do that, they cannot win the general election because Trump supporters are dwindling. As far as voters that they're appeasing right now, you can say Trump's got like a 30% approval rating. So basically 30% of Americans are crazy, Trump-supporting people. That's not the case. It's more like 30% of America are Republicans total, and about 30% of them are Trump supporters. And they're turning on Trump. So you're talking about maybe talking to 8% of the actual voters. You need to get out of that. You need to climb out of that 8% and start talking to the other people, or you're going to have no... This is why I keep saying and have been saying for a long time that these midterm elections are going to go very poorly for the Republicans. Everyone keeps on with this, the midterms after whatever party gets the White House, they lose, blah, blah, blah. This is different. It's different in so many ways. Tony Evers has had to veto more than a dozen bills sent to his desk by the crazy legislature in Wisconsin. And by the way, Trump did not win the primary in 2016. Ted Cruz won the Wisconsin primary in 2016. So Wisconsin was not Trump supporting in 2016. There were even a lot of Wisconsin Republicans saying, see, we're not crazy. Well, you are now. So Wisconsinites who are listening to my voice, vote today and show them how scared they should be. And then, more importantly, vote on November 8th. Write it down. Put it in your phone, November 8th. Put it in your phone with a couple of alerts on November 6th and 7th. Voting day is November 8th. And you Wisconsinites need to get rid of your crazies in the elected official department.
I said that like Ted Cruz isn't crazy.
Crazy? Right, but I mean, you know, they were bragging about not supporting Trump at least. But hey, we got to go in Wisconsin. You've been listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I have been Todd Mickelson sitting in for the Matt McNeil Show. If you're listening on AM 950, we'll be back in a few minutes. And in Wisconsin, I'll see you Thursday. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I am not Matt McNeil. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. He's on vacation. We're not allowed to know where he is. Patrick has heard that it's possible he's in the secret bunker in Antarctica.
Where the International Space Station is another rumor.
Ah, yeah. I did see a weird light in the sky the other night. It was actually the night he left for vacation. It was going up, like it was going into space from Earth. So today is primary day, and we're going to play a pre-recorded interview, but it's very newly pre-recorded. It was recorded probably at about an hour ago. Probably finished about an hour ago. So it's up to date. But it's with Patrick Coulican from the Minnesota Reformer, which we rely on heavily here because they are a stellar source for Minnesota news. And I see one of Patrick's main headlines today is the GOP unease about Doug Wardlow. So I'm sure they're going to be talking about that. As a matter of fact, Brett is the interviewer of Patrick Coulican, the interviewee, and Brett told me that they're going to talk about that. They're going to be talking about the primary, and so I'm sure Doug Wardlow is. That's probably the biggest, most controversial race. Would you agree, Patrick?
Absolutely. And the Republican Party of Minnesota made no bones about saying that we are not happy with Doug Wardlow, to say the least, because the Republican Party, and Brett and I were talking about this, very heavily expects people to abide by their endorsement. And Jim Schultz was the endorsee for that particular office because the Republican Party feels we want that three-month head start. We want them to be attacking Democrats, not attacking each other. So now they've had to spend 3 months fighting each other before now one of them gets to go after Keith Ellison. They finally get that right. You know, we'll find out tonight or tomorrow or you know, maybe Thursday if it's a close race. But the Republican Party said, we expect you to abide by that endorsement because you can start going, we want that head start so you can go right after Democrats. And unfortunately, in the attorney general's race, which is probably one of the two races that the Republicans feel the most confident about, along with the governorship, at least, you know, outwardly, you know, they think they've got a really good chance in the attorney general's race. So there was extra frustration that, you know, we've had to fight each other for 3 months in a race that we really legitimately feel that we can win.
Yep. Well, that's of course, kind of how it always works. You know, parties don't like it when they have a primary, you know, actual competitive primary race because, yeah, it takes time away from going after the other party. However, in the Democratic Party, the last two governors did not get the endorsement and did primary and win the primary race. Sometimes it just goes like that as well. Now, of course, a statewide race like that, of course, this is also a statewide race, but the governor's race, the Democrats know they're going to win the general election. working hard in the primary is not as big a deal as it is here where the Republicans need to actually make up ground. Once Walz got the endorsement, it was like, you may as well start calling him governor, because Democrats, you know, the Republicans just They haven't won a state office since 2006. That's 16 years ago, for cripe's sake. And so I know that you just said, and I know that it's true that the Republicans think that they have a chance of beating Keith Ellison. I don't think they do. Well, of course, especially if Doug Wardlow runs against him. Doug Wardlow already lost against him before. Pretty handily. I mean, you know, he did a good job of losing hard. And that's part of the Republicans' argument in this primary race. Jim Schultz says, I'm the only candidate in this race who has not already lost to Keith Ellison. And Doug Wardlow also, he says that the 2020 election was stolen. I think he has even said that he would do things to try and change it or do things to try and change the voting laws in Minnesota. He's backed up by the pillow guy, the MyPillow guy. I think he was even the MyPillow guy's lawyer. And so anyway, I know Patrick Coulihan and Brett are going to talk more about that. But the one question I want to put up that I would be surprised if they covered. Patrick, do you think, or do you know if Brett might think in your conversation that you had with him, that if this primary race goes for Jim Schultz, could you see Doug Wardlow saying it's rigged and wanting a recount and wanting it to be overturned and things like that? I could see Doug Wardlow doing that. What do you think about that?
I kind of think he won't. I think at that point, you know, that they're going to I think he's got enough sense to say the focus now needs to be on beating Keith Ellison. I think the Republicans are a little more, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but you know, it's less about electing Republicans and more about beating Democrats than vice versa on the Democratic side of things. I think as Brett and I talked about back at the convention when there was a deadlock with 5 minutes remaining in their convention, that Scott Jensen only had about 58% of the vote. Kendall Qualls' group of delegates wasn't really budging. And, you know, my comment was, I bet enough of them just throw it to Jensen because their concern is beating Tim Walz and they don't really care who the nominee is. And I think that'll probably be what happens in the attorney general's race.
Yeah, the only difference there is that Doug Wardlow is kind of crazy and just wants attention. And I could see him not being focused on that. I could see him not caring at all about it. I could also see him realizing that Jim Schultz can't beat Keith Ellison either. So I'm just going to keep my name in the news because it's fun, you know. Doug Wardlow is just so unpredictable. I don't know. I think I'm to the point where I would be surprised if he does what you just said. If he just goes, okay, I lost fair and square, now let's go beat Keith Ellison. Because that's what a normal person would do. And Doug Wardlow is so far gone as far as being away from normalcy or being a human being, basically. You know, like I said, like last week when Casey Kasem was doing Casey Kasem's countdown of Republicans who have surrendered their status as a human being. I stopped the countdown, if you hadn't noticed, because it's just there. It's never ending. I add like 20 more names every day to that countdown. So I don't. I would just be doing it constantly for 2 hours, and I wouldn't be even including everybody who made the list. And by the way, they all tie for first place. So it's not even a countdown. It's just kind of an announcement of a list of Republicans who are no longer human beings and have proven it to us. Anyway, yeah, big day. Yesterday, of course, was a huge day. If you remember me talking yesterday about some of the back in Watergate days, we had to make a new law because Nixon was threatening and possibly, you know, people were seeing the possibility that we might need to make a law where you need to preserve documents from the White House, from the presidency. Presidents have always done that, but there was such a threat that Nixon might burn those tapes. And I don't even think it was a threat. I just think it popped into people's heads, and you know, that, wow, he could have just taken them in the backyard and burned them, and then we would have never found out all the crimes that he committed. So they basically made taping the takes in the backyard and burning them against the law. They also, in that same law, made it against the law for you to take boxes and boxes of documents home from the White House to your home in Mar-a-Lago. And that's why he got raided yesterday. And it also happened to be the anniversary of yesterday. What was the anniversary?
I'm not sure. You tell us.
Nixon resigning.
Oh, that's right. I did see this because it, you know, there was one of those tweets. We go back to the first hour. You're talking about August 8th should be No One Is Above the Law Day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good idea. So there are some correlations between Watergate and what's going on with Trump right now. And Trump tried to point one out, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later on in the show, but why don't we take a break? And when we come back, let's go to Brett Johnson's interview of Patrick Coulican. What do you say we do that, Patrick?
Let's do that.
Okay, let's do that. You've been listening to Todd Mickelson sitting in for the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll come back in, on the other side of the interview.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. Well, today is not only our usual Tuesday conversation with Patrick Coulican of the Minnesota Reformer, but it is also primary day, so good time to bring in Patrick of the Reformer to give us a little preview of some of the races to watch tonight, both at the state legislature, also at the state level, and even some of these big congressional races. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. By the way, make sure you go to MinnesotaReformer.com as they'll be providing some election night coverage as well. So today we'll mainly be diving through some of the races and the big ones to watch this evening as Minnesota voters head to the polls. And let's start off on the congressional level and go down to southern Minnesota. This one probably the most competitive race. Well, race is, because there's technically two elections. One that will elect a representative to fill the term of the late Jim Hagedorn, who died earlier this year. And then a primary election to see who will actually be running in November. So voters in the first district technically have two elections that they'll be voting in. But at least in the first district for who's going to fill out the remainder of Hagedorn's term, it's an interesting race between Jeff Ettinger and Brad Finstad, the Republican, to see kind of how far that district has changed since 2018 and 2020, since it has been trending Republican. But then again, the abortion ruling has kind of upended things. So what are your thoughts here on this first district? It could serve as kind of a bellwether for what could be happening possibly this fall, especially on that abortion issue. What are you thinking in this first district race tonight?
Well, yeah, this district, it's almost hard to believe now, but as early as 2018, Democratic Governor Tim Walz was the congressman there after being elected in 2006, and the district seemed to have swung really far to the right in the 2016 election and in the 2020 election with President Trump winning the district by really significant margins. I think Democrats were excited in the candidate they got in Ettinger. He's the former CEO of Hormel Foods, a really well-known guy, and very active in the community and with philanthropy, seems like a pretty good candidate. Republicans kind of dodged a bullet because they wound up with this kind of vanilla Brad Finstad person who worked in the Department of Agriculture, which gives you, I guess, some credibility with some of the ag voters and those communities. But most importantly, they did not wind up with Jennifer Carnahan on the ballot. That's the widow of the late Representative Hagedorn. She had a lot of vulnerabilities as a candidate. And the same would go with Jeremy Munson, who's a kind of hard right figure who was also running. So Republicans got the candidate they wanted on the ballot. Democrats also got their candidate they wanted. So what we're going to see is what direction that district is going. And if Democrats can't make it close, I think that's probably not a great sign for them in the fall, not just in that district, but in a lot of districts across the country that are outside of the big major metros where they seem to be where their strength is.
All right, let's move back to the metro area and talk about the DFL primary in the 5th Congressional District, as the incumbent Ilhan Omar is being challenged by Don Samuels, who is currently the CEO of MicroGrants, which is a nonprofit that gives small grants to low-income people. Now, Samuels does have the endorsement of a number of politicians from the 5th District, including Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, as well as the mayors of Edina, Golden Valley, New Hope, and St. Louis Park. So there have been some prognosticators saying that perhaps Samuels does have a chance to knock off Omar for the DFL primary. But what are your thoughts on this race, Patrick? Because I remember the same thing being said back in 2020 when Anton Melton Moe was challenging Ilhan Omar, and he ended up falling about 18 points behind her in that primary election. What are you thinking about the race between Samuels and Omar?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought that if there was a Democrat who was going to take out the Representative Omar in a primary, it would have been in 2020, because that was her first re-election, and she was coming off kind of a wave of bad press, both locally and nationally. Some of it was self-inflicted on her part. She kind of made some mistakes, and seems to have kind of righted the ship. Maybe tweeting a little less and paying a bit more attention to the district. And so I kind of thought that she had this had that district locked down. And I still think so, but as you say, a lot of people are talking about Samuels gaining momentum here late with some good endorsements. He's raised a lot of money. People are spending on his behalf. It just seems unlikely to me, given all the advantages Omar has, and that strong base of progressive supporters she has, and also she and her people have a repeatedly strong ground game, and so they're going to be out knocking doors and getting people to the polls. So I still think she's a favorite, but it has been a wild few years in politics.
Yeah, and overall, it's just always very tough to knock off an incumbent in a primary. Very rarely happens, so we'll wait and see if something does maybe change in CD5, but at least right now, Omar probably heading into tonight as a favorite. Moving on to another race, let's talk about the Attorney General's race, because the Republicans do have a competitive primary where Jim Schultz is currently the endorsed Republican candidate, but he is facing off against Doug Wardlow, who was the Republican nominee for AG back in 2018. And Wardlow does have a bit of a checkered past that at least among progressive listeners, might raise some eyebrows, including the fact that he was the general counsel for Mike Lindell, of course, of the MyPillow company, that is who is an election denier, obviously. So what are your thoughts on this race, and what are you hearing? Because as I understand it right now, Republicans typically like to go a little bit more with their endorsed candidates, and overall they don't seem all that thrilled with the fact that Wardlow is challenging Jim Schultz for the GOP nomination for Attorney General.
Right. There's a great trivia question in Minnesota politics. When was the last time that the Democratic nominee for governor had won his party's endorsement? And the answer is Wendell Anderson. So, and the moral of that tale is that Democrats very often break with the party endorsement and wind up nominating somebody else, whereas we do not see that as much on the Republican side. They tend to back the endorsed candidate and Jim Scholz, who's Republicans have high hopes for as somebody who can break this 15-year losing streak in statewide races and break a half-century losing streak in attorney general races. He's Harvard Law. He's articulate. He doesn't have a voting record. He doesn't have a lot of public statements that carry all baggage. So they have a lot of high hopes for him, and he is the endorsed candidate. But the problem is, do Republican voters know that? Wardlow was endorsed in 2018 and was their nominee in 2018. So Republican voters might be more familiar with him. And so I think that's where there's some unease amongst Republican sources I talk to about how this might wind up. And the reason there's unease is they don't want Wardlow on the ballot. He just brings so much baggage. You mentioned the Lindell thing, but he's also just deep into what Michael Broadcorp told me today was what he called the MAGA Legion of Doom. And people like Michael Flynn and just that whole cast of characters I think most Minnesotans want no part of. And Doug, he brings that whole world in here of election denial and really extreme abortion views, and he's just bad for the whole ticket if he winds up being the nominee, just up and down the ballot. It becomes very, very easy to paint, especially when you throw in Kim Crockett, the Republican nominee for Secretary of State, and then just Scott Jensen and Matt Burke. It just looks like a extreme ticket that Minnesotans wouldn't want any part of, and so they're nervous about this race. It could wind up being much ado about nothing, and maybe Republican voters they have the information in hand, and they're going to go vote for Scholz, and they'll have a real good shot in the fall. But I think there's just an unease about where things are headed there.
And speaking of unease for Republicans, turning our attention now to what's happening in the state legislature, the group Action for Liberty, this is kind of that Eric Mortensen-backed group that runs more on the far right side of the Republican Party, is running a number of candidates that have pulled off some upsets in endorsement conventions earlier this year, including Senator Eric Pratt from Prior Lake. So tell us about some of these Action for Liberty candidates that are running around the state, because I know Mortensen is actually facing a challenge from former Representative Bob Loon and down in his district in Shakopee. So this Action for Liberty group, which has primarily been known as Eric Mortensen, has started gaining some traction around the state, and they are running a number of candidates around the state.
Yeah, so they're a right-wing pressure group that's been around for a while, and they'd love to go at their fellow Republicans that they regard as too squishy and rhinos and not right-wing enough, and generally have had very little success. But this cycle, they have managed to win, especially on the Senate side. They've won some Senate endorsements at Republican conventions. And so there's two Republican incumbent senators, Eric Pratt and Paul Utke, who did not win their endorsements. And there's quite a bit of concern amongst Republican operatives that those guys could be losing. And then it's not so much whether or not they lose those seats in the fall, although certainly the Pratt seat is a possibility for Democrats, I think, in the suburbs. But it's also the governing majority that you have, even if Republicans keep the Senate, because you're going to have a kind of sub-caucus of one GOP operative referred to them as the nuts. I was more polite in my description and called them loons. In my newsletter this morning, but if you've got five of them and your majority is 38, well, now you kind of really only have 33, and you need 34 to pass anything. So interesting situation developing on the Senate side.
Yeah, that is an interesting point, because even if Republicans were able to take majorities in the House or Senate or both, if they have a large contingent, or at least relatively large contingent, of these Action for Liberty candidates that end up getting the nominations and winning, that could make governing very difficult when they oftentimes don't see eye to eye with a more, I guess we'll call it, mainstream Republican Party. All right, final question for you. I know you've had a chance to speak to a number of political operatives around the state from both the GOP and the DFL side. Any predictions from them tonight that stood out to you in terms of who could win some of the nominations in these races?
I think that the predictions that a couple of incumbent Republican senators could lose to these right-wing insurgents, I think it shows you that this intramural battle in the Republican Party is still raging hot, and it really would have a big impact, not just on the fall election, but also on the makeup of the state Senate next year.
Well, you have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you go to minnesotareformer.com for the latest in Minnesota news and politics, and to also follow along what's happening in the primary elections tonight. Patrick, as always, thanks for the time today. Good to chat with you.
Good to be here.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Todd Mickelson here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We're back with Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. There's a new meme. Joe Biden is calling Donald Trump. Joe Biden says, knock, knock. Trump says, who's there? I can't do a very good Joe Biden. Joe Biden, I'll just do it in my own voice. Joe Biden says, knock, knock. Trump says, who's there? Joe. Joe who? Joe ass is going to jail. another kind of humorous story. Judge rejects Giuliani's medical excuse. Rudy Giuliani was ordered to appear before a grand jury in Georgia last month. He failed to appear, claiming not to have seen the date on the summons until it was too late. Good excuse. Now he's begging for more time, citing a medical procedure and a doctor's note that he's not cleared for air travel. But the judge has rejected his plea, and he has to appear in court next week in Atlanta, Georgia.
Who wants to bet it's easily going to be provable that Giuliani has been on some planes lately? I'm not saying that because I've done the research, but you can probably find that out fairly easily.
Exactly, and apparently he has. He's got tickets for shortly after the procedure. He's got plane tickets, so he's planning on flying, and apparently he took a plane trip recently as well. So, but the judge is saying, well, if he can't fly, he can drive, but he's showing up. Seriously, the judge did say that. He said, I don't care how he gets here, but he's getting here. Yeah. What Patrick and Patrick Houlihan and Brett Johnson were talking about, the Action for Liberty, these kind of groups, they start up and oftentimes they stay pretty small for a little bit and then they grow. It's really weird how conservatives will do that kind of thing. Some people say that conservatives stick together more. Their messaging is more on point, and they all stick together with it. And Democrats are talking too much about the issues. And well, it's because, in my opinion, I shouldn't just proclaim that it is because of this, but what I think it is because of is that conservatives are always, they're fighting for no change. They're fighting for things to maybe even go backwards. That's kind of, the real definition of conservatism. It's, you don't want change. Progressives want change. Progress. And that's just inherently more complicated. Okay, well, what kind of progress you want to make? Well, I think we should, better support schools. Okay, well, how do you propose we do that? Well, if we had a fourth tier taxation, we would get more revenues and then we would have more money for our budget and we could allocate more of it. You know, then you're already talking like that instead of just going, you know, just yelling something like conservatives usually do.
It's rigged. It was rigged.
That's kind of what they're running on now, a lot of them. So it's easier for them to message because they don't have a mess. They don't have any proposals. They don't have any issues they want to make progress on. They have nothing to explain to anybody. Well, that's a lot easier than trying to explain kind of complex policy. People are following a lot closer now, though, because now conservatives have taken it so far, you know, pro-life, the Democrats are killing babies. Well, now they've kind of gotten their way on that. They're, like people are saying, the dog that caught the car, and they don't know what to do. But now Democrats are saying, vote for Democrats because the conservatives are trying to take away women's rights and protections. And they're also trying to take away your right for contraception, for instance. If you're gay, they want to take away your right to marry. If you're LGBTQ, they basically just want to murder you. You know, so the Republicans are making messaging for Democrats easier. I'm talking about this with the candidates that I'm working with, primarily Lauren Bresnahan. She last week, so we have a meeting every Monday night, a remote meeting, just kind of to keep the campaign going, keep our little campaign team abreast to what's going on all the given weeks. And last week she said, you know, at the doors, I'm still hearing people talking about the economy inflation and stuff. Now, I think part of the reason she's hearing that is because she's a PhD economist. And so people are kind of asking her more about the economy. You know, they're kind of, you know, going under her purview. You know, they think that she has something to say about economics. But now this week she said, and her campaign manager said, we have been hearing a lot of people are just saying, you know, are you for, you know, gun safety? And we say yes, and they say, okay, that's all I need to hear. I'm voting for you. You know, are you for preserving Roe v. Wade? Yes, okay, that's all I need to hear from you. I'll vote for you. Starting to hear a lot more of that. You know, people are just being one or two or, you know, you can be a 5-point voter at this point, and all five of them are really, really important points. You know, the single issue voter, there may be single issue voters because of Roe v. Wade, but quite likely that voter also is very much wants us to do something about gun safety, gun violence. So now they're a two-issue voter, but both issues are extremely important. It's kind of like I have pointed out, I believe on this show before, that back 10 years ago, what we were talking about the summer of 2012, it was the first time I was running. So I was going to the doors, and I thought, you know, in a red district, I'm probably going to hear a lot of talk about gay marriage because at that point, the Republicans, the Minnesota Republicans, put on the ballot, the general election ballot in 2012, to basically to codify by putting an amendment onto the Minnesota Constitution that would forever outlaw gay marriage. Now, as it turns out, I had one person ask me if, you know, how I felt about gay marriage. And I told him and he said, okay, you know, we disagree, so get off of my lawn. I thought I was going to get more of that in a red district. I didn't. And of course, Minnesota overwhelmingly voted against that amendment. And then when the legislature came back that January, I believe, that year they came back in January. Doesn't matter, but when the next session began in Minnesota, one of the first things the DFL did was legalize gay marriage in the state of Minnesota. That's something that I don't think the DFL was ready to do. I don't think the DFL thought that Minnesotans were ready to do that. But after the Republicans tried to outlaw gay marriage, the DFL party saw Minnesota's reaction and they thought, wow, Minnesota is ready for this. And they passed gay marriage before the country did. And I don't think that would have happened had the Republicans not brought up the subject. The Republicans are the ones who misread everybody. And I believe they're misreading everybody now, even more so. And that's why Nancy Pelosi is making them vote on these things. Yeah, we're going to take a vote on an assault weapons ban. And we're going to make you vote against it, Republicans. Because Nancy knows that, 77% of Americans think that we should have an assault weapons ban. So she wants that 77% of Americans to see Republicans voting against what they want. Same with contraception. She brought up a vote. And we all got to see Republicans vote against the right to contraception. It's kind of like a rabbit will be in the field and an eagle will be up in a tree. And the eagle hasn't seen the rabbit because the rabbit is sitting still. Then all of a sudden the rabbit notices the eagle and it gets scared and it tries to run for the forest, but it's in the middle of an open field. Well, right when it starts running, that's what catches the eagle's eye. And then the eagle goes down and gets the rabbit. It's kind of an old Native American fable. In medicine cards, I am the rabbit. I'm two things. I'm the rabbit and I'm the skunk. I'm the skunk because if you know me, you either really like me or you really hate me. And I'm the rabbit because I'm all panicky and do things out of fear. Now, actually, I don't think I do that anymore because I learned from the medicine cards. This was like 25 years ago. But I think that's a valuable fable, and I think that's the Republicans have been doing that over and over, and I think now the Democrats are the eagle, the midterms are the open field, and the Republicans are the rabbit. We're going to get you. Let's take a break and come back in a few minutes. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show today. And then tomorrow, Brett Johnson will be hosting the Matt McNeil Show. And then I'll be back for Thursday and Friday. And then if all goes well up in outer space and the vehicle that Matt is using to leave the space station and come back to Earth, if all works well next weekend, then he'll be back next Monday. I keep forgetting to bring a new light switch and screwdriver to fix this light. I feel like I'm in a lightning storm in this room all the time. I'll try and remember that on Thursday, maybe. Pete Stauber, he says, it's unprecedented and alarming for the FBI to search a former president's private residence. The American people need clear answers immediately as to why the raid at Mar-a-Lago happened. You can't figure out why the raid at Mar-a-Lago happened? Part of why it happened is because Florida federal magistrate Bruce Reinhart, who approved the FBI raid at Trump's home and represented several Epstein associates after leaving U.S. Attorney's Office in 2008, was appointed by Donald Trump in 2018. And he, not to mention Donald Trump, also handpicked the director of the FBI. So both the judge and the FBI director who approved and this search warrant, they're Trump. Why can't I talk? They were appointed by Trump. Interesting thing happened to Mastriano. He's a senator in Pennsylvania. I think his name is Doug. Is it Doug Mastriano?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah, and he is running to be the governor in Pennsylvania. He was asked to cooperate with the January 6th committee investigation, so he was asked to come in and talk to them, and he agreed to do it, and everyone was surprised by that. News came out a few days ago that he was going to do that. But then it turns out that he just got up and walked out after 15 minutes. He didn't answer a single question. I wonder why. Wonder why he wouldn't answer any of the questions.
As I recall, he was the candidate for governor that the GOP leadership in Pennsylvania did not want for governor.
Absolutely, they don't want him because he was at the January 6th riots. He's probably going to end up getting in further trouble, but he was one of the insurrectionists. Hey, President Biden signed into law the CHIPS and Science Act. I know I already said this, but it's a great day. It's a great day. It's a once-in-a-generation law that invests in America by supercharging our efforts to make semiconductors here at home. Today represents a more secure economy, jobs, and a stronger future for the United States. This, well, the former president is going down for the count. It's really happening. All the people who said, oh, Trump's not going to ever get indicted. Well, he's not yet been indicted, but they just raided his home, and he's got a bunch of other crimes. I mean, at first, people didn't know which crime they were raiding his home over. Well, now we know it's for one of them. It's because he took the boxes of stuff home from the White House. There was a time where he offered a speech of his to be resold on eBay by asked reporters, does anyone want to sell my speech on eBay? That's illegal. So if you're too dumb to know something is illegal and you break that law, should you get in trouble? Some say yes.
Some say if you plead the fifth, it means you're guilty.
What about if you get up and walk out in the middle of your deposition? And you refuse to answer any questions. Yeah. Anyway, big, big stuff. Big stuff going on. We're running out of time here on the radio show. But Brett will be back. He'll be here tomorrow reporting on what happened last night, which is tonight, of course, for the Minnesota primaries. And I think that will be interesting, especially down in the CD1. It's possible that somebody might lose the primary but win the special election, in which case they will be a congressperson but unable to run in the general election in a couple months. A really weird situation. All right, you've been listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I have been Todd Mickelson in for the Matt McNeil Show. We'll see you Thursday.